Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead in January. Every January, millions of us resolve to do something, anything, different or better in the coming year. I suppose my resolution would be to get outside and enjoy the night sky more. It'll be tough. I'm often too busy or too tired or, well, you get the picture. So how's about you and I agree to do more stargazing this coming year, okay? We'll want to make good on that pledge right away, because there's a full moon on New Year's Day. In Native American lore, it's known as the Wolf Moon. And the fact that it's right at the beginning of the month is important, as I'll explain later. Another kickstart for your 2018 stargazing comes in the first week of January with the arrival of the Quadranted Meteor Shower. These meteors get their name from Quadrans Muralis, an obsolete constellation near the handle of the Big Dipper, and they seem to radiate from that point in the sky. Usually, we can count on the quads to give us a brief but intense burst of meteors. Unfortunately, this year the predicted peak falls on January 3rd during daylight hours in North America, and the nearly full moon will be an annoyance once darkness falls. But go out that evening anyway, and you might catch a few of the brightest shooting stars from this annual shower. Something else happens on the 3rd, and it might not make sense if you're shivering from winter's cold. On this date, the Earth is closer to the Sun than it'll be at any time for the rest of 2018. It's roughly 2% closer, about 1.5 million miles than average. Can't you just feel all that extra warmth? Because January nights are so long, most of us are up and out the door well before sunrise. I know, it's a drag for me too, but right now those early risings give you a chance to see not one, not two, but four planets in the pre-dawn sky. Let's start with the obvious one, Jupiter, which rises about 3 a.m. and sits high over the southeast horizon by the time those first rosy fingers of dawn show up. You might not see it at first, but Mars is very close to Jupiter in early January. They start the month a couple of degrees apart, with the red planet to the upper right. But by January 6th, they're so close together, just a third of a degree apart, that you'll have a hard time spotting Mars because Jupiter is 20 times brighter. In the days afterward, the two drift apart, now with Jupiter to the upper right. A crescent moon stands nearby on the morning of the 11th. Meanwhile, draw an imaginary line from those two planets to the lower left, down next to the horizon. In the first days of January, keep watch there for the planet Mercury, which is actually making its best appearance of the whole year this month. It's bright and easy to spot if you start looking about 30 or 40 minutes before sunrise. Make sure you have a completely clear view, with no trees or buildings in the direction of southeast. By the second week of January, start looking for a companion climbing up from the horizon and edging closer to Mercury day by day. Can you see it? That's Saturn. It's a much bigger world, of course, but it looks dimmer here because it's on the far side of the Sun, more than a billion miles away. Mercury, though much smaller, is 20 times closer. Circle the 13th on your calendar. Yeah, it's a Saturday morning, but get up early anyway for the big finale. On that morning, Mercury and Saturn will be less than a degree apart. That's less than the width of your pinky finger held up at arm's length. And that same morning, a lovely crescent moon is perched to their upper right, with the pairing of Jupiter and Mars to its upper right. What a show! The only bright planet missing from all this is Venus, which for the moment is lost in the Sun's glare. But by next month, it'll start creeping up in the west after sunset. Now let's talk stars for a bit. What's your favorite star pattern? It doesn't have to be an entire constellation. It might be any obvious arrangement of bright stars, what astronomers call an asterism. Maybe it's the Big Dipper, but right now it's lying low along the northern horizon on January evenings. Another obvious asterism is the five-star zigzag of Cassiopeia. It looks like a squashed W in summertime and like a flattened M in winter. After sunset, once it gets dark, face north and look almost straight up. There's Cassiopeia in its M position. It's a little wider than your fist held at arm's length. Its left side is the brightest and easiest to see. This grouping is the Big Dipper's counterpart in the northern sky. In spring and summer, when the Dipper rides high, Cassiopeia lurks low. In fall and winter, it's Cassiopeia's turn to shine high over the evening world while the Dipper sinks low behind the trees. All five stars in this M asterism are truly big and bright, outshining the sun by anywhere from 70 to 8,000 times. This impressive brightness, combined with being no more than a few hundred light years away, is why you can spot this distinctive quintet almost at a glance from your driveway. In Greek mythology, Cassiopeia was a queen in what's now Ethiopia, and the mother of Andromeda. Ancient sky watchers not only subdivided the sky into constellations, but also gave each noteworthy star its own proper name. Some of these came from various cultures and flukes of folklore, but often they simply told the body part that the star supposedly represents in its constellation figure. For instance, although the middle star in Cassiopeia's M has no official name, the ones on either side of it, plus the bright one at the left end, are named Kaf, Sheter, and Rukhba. These are medieval European corruptions of the Arabic words for hand, breast, and knee. Let's leave the queen and shift our gaze over toward east. You'll see the stars of Orion, the hunter, striding up from the horizon. Look in particular for a trio of bright stars in a vertical row. These mark Orion's belt, yet another asterism, and there's nothing else like them anywhere in the sky. To the belt's upper left is the bright star Betelgeuse, which marks the hunter's shoulder. Maybe you've heard it called Betelgeuse, like that weird 1988 movie. Use whatever works for you. Study Betelgeuse a bit, and maybe you'll notice that it's got a warm color, like weak ginger ale. Betelgeuse is a red supergiant, a truly massive star that has swollen to tremendous size in its old age. But Betelgeuse still looks like a pinpoint in the sky because it's very far away, about 600 light years. Now, on the right side of Orion's belt is another really bright star, Rigel. Can you see the color difference between peachy Betelgeuse and icy white Rigel? It might seem counterintuitive, but these icy white stars are the very hottest. Rigel's surface temperature is more than 20,000 degrees Fahrenheit, whereas Betelgeuse is only a third of that. Go figure. Now remember that full moon back on New Year's Day? This month features another full moon on January 31st, and that one is special in three ways. First, it's what's become known as a blue moon, meaning the second full moon in a single month. The actual origin of this term is different. It used to refer to the fourth full moon in a three-month season, but this two-in-the-same-month definition seems to be winning out. Also noteworthy is the fact that the full moon will look especially big because it's nearly at the closest point in its orbit to Earth. Finally, and most importantly, on January 31st, the moon will pass through Earth's shadow, causing a total lunar eclipse. We haven't had one of these in more than 2 years. Those of you out west will see the lunar disk completely in Earth's shadow in the hours before dawn. Totality will last about 75 minutes, with the midpoint at 5:30 a.m. Pacific Time, or 6:30 a.m. Mountain Time. But for those roughly east of the Mississippi River, the moon sets in the west and the sun rises before the eclipse gets its deepest. Yeah, the timing could be better, but at least you'll have all those planets to keep you company before dawn. And don't forget, we've resolved to do some stargazing more often this year, right? For suggestions on what to see, including more details about the lunar eclipse, you can always check out the sky watching tips at skyandtelescope.com. Next month, we'll spend a little time with the part of the Milky Way you can see in winter rather than in summer. Until then, I wish you clear skies.